Hi everybody, this is Steve Savitsky, and today we have a call from the other side of the ocean. We are talking to Rabbi Dr. Harvey Belofsky. Rabbi Dr. Belofsky was kind enough to answer some questions that we had in our Jewish Action, which should be coming out very shortly. And Rabbi Belofsky is the rabbi of the Gold is Green Synagogue in London, and he's a PhD from the University of London. And Rabbi Belofsky, thank you so much for being on the program.
It's a great pleasure. Hi.
How are you doing? Okay.
Good, thank you.
So, how are things doing in London these days? By the way,
it's great. It's a bit cold. What's it like in New York?
New York's pretty nice. Not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Great.
So, in the recent edition, the next edition of the Jewish Action, which will be out in a few weeks, we asked a question to several people, and Rabbi Belofsky was kind enough to answer one of the questions. And I want to talk about this because it's an important issue, and it really has to do with the divorce in the Orthodox Jewish community, particularly among young people. And the question is, why do you think this is so, and what can be done about it? When I read your answer, I mean, the first response obviously has to do with society. Is that right? I mean, in general, in society today, it's not that easy to stay married.
That's right. The truth is that the current tone in society is against commitment. People are encouraged to find pleasure where they can get it, to avoid any kind of serious long-term commitment, even regard monogamy or any kind of working on a relationship that might need attention or serious investment to make it successful is something undesirable and unnecessary. So the starting point is a society which discourages commitment and is really quite comfortable with people floating from one relationship to another, families in which the parents have been divorced once or twice and got several children from different marriages all bolted together are quite normal, and it's impossible that that doesn't have an influence even on our Orthodox community.
So you're saying that the whole institution of marriage is really under attack to a certain extent.
Yeah, this is not news, but as a long-term serious commitment to a single relationship, which will require work and attention, will have its ups and downs, that is quite against the zeitgeist as things are at the moment.
But focusing in again, as you say, on our situation, I guess you're really, as I'm reading your response, rather critical of the shidduch system that we have today, and you're saying that it probably contributes to the poor relationships and the early breakups, correct?
Yes, certainly. I mean, it's quite easy to lay the blame. It's outside society's fault. All we need to do is to close off the influences from outside, but that's much too simplistic. I think that there are significant internal issues which contribute to the problem. I mean, the shidduch system, let's start a little bit about this. If it's used properly, people introduced to appropriate potential partners, date in a serious and appropriate way, it can be an excellent way of meeting a partner. I'm not going out of my way to say this system has completely failed, but it has weaknesses. And in a society where people often misunderstand the process, and parents perhaps, despite their best intentions to their children, might be tempted to see shidduchim as an opportunity to build an alliance with another family, as a financial advancement, not necessarily looking for the right kind of people for their children or evaluating their suitability. We should be looking for people who are stable, have a long-term capability of building a proper relationship, who are honest, have good middos, and also allowing couples to date for an extended period in order to explore what life would be like together.
What do you mean by extended period? I mean, what's your suggestion?
It's very hard. Obviously, the relationship has to be conducted within halakhic parameters, and that creates strain on a couple if they date for too long. But on the other hand, if they don't see each other for long enough, you can end up with a situation where they barely know each other. The dating gained its own momentum. I've seen it happen. And they only spend a short while in between dates. They become used to the other person very quickly. And suddenly, within a few dates, or even a few weeks perhaps for some people, they make a decision. And there's a lot yet unexplored. It's very hard to quantify what's an appropriate period. People ask me this all the time.
The thing is that people expect after a few dates that you're going to either go forward or you're not. So, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on both the young man and young woman after three, four, five dates to really start to say this is going to make sense or not.
Yeah. I feel that for many people, particularly those of a slightly more modern bent, where they have, fairly complex lives, and they need to get to know each other properly, that's just not adequate, and it's likely to lead to wrong decisions. And that there is a lot of pressure, but the pressure is coming from a good place. They're concerned that if the couple dates for too long, emotional involvement or physical attraction will cloud the ability to make a decision or even interfere with the relationship altogether. But I think people have to be able to resist that and recognize that they need to date for longer. They need to also see each other in a range of different circumstances.
That's a great point. So when you say different circumstances, how do you engineer that to happen?
Well, I don't know what it's like over there on the other side of the pond, but in London I get the impression and that people are often quite secretive. They don't want their friends even to know that they're seeing someone until the relationship's quite advanced. But actually, it's very artificial to go for a young girl, young boy, they go and sit and they have a drink, or maybe they walk around the museum, and suddenly after three or four goes, or even five or six attempts at this, they're supposed to make a decision as to whether they wish to share every aspect of their lives, whether they're going to be together for the next 50 years, have children together, whether the ups and downs of normal life, have an intimate relationship, all these things I don't think can be evaluated by three orange juices and two trips around the Met. It's not enough.
Uh-huh. Okay, I agree.
By other circumstances, I mean that over a period of time, they need to have spent Shabbos meals with people, discreet people, in each of their own ambits. They should meet each other's friends. They should try to go to different types of venues, and over a period of time, develop an understanding of what the person's like in a range of circumstances. I once heard a very good quote from a well-known Israeli Rosh Yeshiva many years ago, that after this fellow in the yeshiva had been dating for a short while, he went to the Rosh Yeshiva, and he knocked on the door, and he said to the Rosh Yeshiva, "There's a mazel tov, I've got engaged." And the Rosh Yeshiva said to him, "How long did you see her for?" And he said, "Oh, a week." And the Rosh Yeshiva said to him, "So maybe she had a good week." And that was his response to his engagement. And the Rosh Yeshiva was right, that, in a short space of time, you see a person at their best, they're putting on a good face. But everyone has strengths, weaknesses, vulnerability. There's simply no time to get to know all those things in a very short time. And I feel that lays us open to all kinds of problems later on, which could be avoided. I'm convinced there are many, many engagements which would never happen if the couple simply dated another 8 or 10 times.
Okay, so we have to find a way of relieving the pressure that's put on a couple. Then, but that gets back to another issue, which is really, could you date more than one person at one time? And at what point do you think you reach the tipping point where at this point you should only be going out with one person, just to really determine if that is the right person?
Steve, in London, this thing about double dating is something which we laugh at as an American phenomenon. In London, it's unknown. Virtually unknown or virtually unknown. In New York, it's a kind of more common thing. But here, certainly in the circles which I inhabit, which are quite broad, are quite across the religious spectrum, no one dates more than one person at a time. And I like that. I think although it means it's a slower process and it's difficult to get through too many people if the person's not right, it's a while till the next person. At least you're able to focus emotionally and think entirely about the suitability of one person, whereas if the other model, you're always looking over your shoulder to think, well, maybe the other one's better in this area. It creates invidious comparisons and I think a lot of disappointments. So I'm opposed to the whole double dating thing.
Okay. No, I agree with you about that. What I'm just saying is that what I've seen is that somebody goes out on, first of all, till you get the date. I mean, I don't know how it is across the pond. I love the way you say that, by the way. But I'm saying until you get the date, it's a whole investigation process. And then eventually you finally go out on the date, and then you may not go out again for 2 or 3 weeks. And before you know it, you've spent 3 months on going out twice or three times, and you're only 20 or 21 one time. Yeah. And before you know it, you've basically lost an important part. What I'm saying is that don't you think it's okay for someone to go out, they're going out with somebody once, they can go out with somebody else, when they reach a certain point, maybe once you've gone out with somebody 3 times or 4 times, at that point you say, well, let me really concentrate and see if this is going to work. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Okay. So what tends to happen in London is that once the process begins, they see each other much more frequently. Once it starts, they'll be seeing each other twice a week. And you'd see each other the first three or four times within 2 weeks, and then you could make an evaluation. And I think that's a much better way of doing it. I think whenever you're seeing more than one person, it's simply not possible to focus properly on whether on the person's evaluate in a fair and reasonably objective way. Otherwise, you're always comparing them. So I think the solution to your problem is to speed up the process.
Okay.
And not to double or triple date and just make a decision after a few weeks which one's best. I think that's the detriment of both parties.
Right. I guess, but then we get back to maybe she had a good week that week, you know?
Okay, but then they have to date, you know. I think one has to invest in one relationship at a time, even if it takes a few weeks. It doesn't need to take more than a few weeks to see whether there's something serious in it. Not that they should get engaged at that point, but to have some sense of whether there really is a connection which could be taken forward and then explored in the range of circumstances, like I suggested before.
Now, what about the concept of going on these websites and programs that, you know, we have many of them. I'm sure you have many of them also. I mean, do you encourage people to do that?
I think that for the right type of person, as long as it's done carefully with, you know, with personal safety uppermost in people's minds, I think it can be very successful. I think when it comes to dating sites, there are some very successful. To say some are quite discreet in that information is not simply publicly available. And if it's handled carefully, many of these sites have brought together people who would never otherwise have met. I can think of people I know across the spectrum from really not religious at all to members of the Haredi community who have very successfully used this as a method of meeting someone, and they really would never have met the person otherwise. For some people, it can simply be a distraction. Some sites allow you to browse people's profiles and some, you know, make superficial judgments about the person's eligibility based on their appearance or photograph, and it can be a distraction from the real thing. But in principle, I think if a person's cautious, there's a lot to be said for them.
And do you think that the system, the way it's being set up, where people are, you know, set up with one another, is a good system? Or do you think, like, I know we have, let's say, for instance, at the OU, you know, we have a big program called NCSY, which is a very large outreach program. And
yeah,
we have advisors, you know, who come from college. They come from Michigan University, Eastern College, Touro, Landers, other schools. And I've watched this over the years, and I've seen great relationships develop, and we've made a lot of shidduchim, and it seems to me to be almost a more natural environment because you're meeting somebody, you know, in a very, very nice place, in a place where you're involved in an extremely important aspect of Jewish life, and without the pressure, and you get a chance to really see what somebody's like.
Absolutely. I agree. I think they're a good program. One has to be always bear in mind that there are certain concerns about mixed environments which are uncontrolled. But in principle, it's a normal way to meet people. It's how people always used to meet, I think, in the past. And that over-segregation or a kind of over-formalized process probably creates an unnatural, uncomfortable environment. And I think you're absolutely right. And that I recall some quite famous rabbi who found separate seating at weddings rather objectionable. But he said, well, at the very least, if you're going to have separate seating at weddings, ensure that the young singles, sit together. So how else are they going to meet each other? And of course, we do exactly the opposite. We might have mixed seating at weddings, but the couples are always seated separately.
So you're in favor of
natural environments and to sit together.
Right, I agree. Meeting together at a wedding is a great opportunity for young people to sit and get to meet each other, right?
Meeting in a more natural environment, again, it has to be kind of monitored carefully, but within sensible parameters. I agree. And I think that it's more likely to lead to natural relations. And also, in my own experience, by providing environments like that, people who the shidduch system would never put together because of disparity of background, disparity of age, disparity of religious, ostensible religious commitment, I mean, they would never be put together by a shidduch system because on paper they look incompatible, but nonetheless have gone on to meet and make successful marriages.
And you were saying that some people believe wrongly that marriage is going to solve all their problems. And by getting married, once you do that, and you're saying it's a time bomb because if there's a problem beforehand, an emotional problem or other problems, it's going to come out sooner or later.
Yeah. I'm afraid this a certain number of cases I've seen recently, and it seems to be a growing problem. There are lots of people who are going into marriages, I suppose it was always like this, and they have various problems, issues, psychological problems, emotional problems from their background or experiences, and they really need to be addressed. And they're either unacknowledged, or even if the person acknowledges the problem, they have deluded themselves into thinking that they'll just go away when they get married, or marriage will solve the problem, and so on. And unfortunately, the reality is that any problem of that sort, particularly if it's based on previous bad relationship experience or a problem with the family, is likely to create friction with the marriage, and sometimes is a time bomb, as you say, which will explode at some point and ruin the marriage.
Right.
And the only solution to that is get yourself straight before you get married, because marriage is not a therapy. Your marriage partner is not your therapist, and it's very likely that even if the marriage survives, it's going to be very rocky and there are going to be lots of problems unless some of these issues are addressed before. And unfortunately, you know, pressure encourages people to get married young, to meet young, and there's still, I don't know what it's like in New York, but it's certainly in London, there's definitely a bit of a stigma attached to sort of acknowledging that one has issues of this sort. It means suggesting that there's some issue with one's background or family, but without actually addressing those problems and learning how to create a relationship, and particularly from people who come from homes where there's not been a good role model couple, we are sitting on a time bomb, and many, many marriages are destroyed by this problem.
Right, and I see you say it really beautifully in the article that you write in the Jewish Action. You say, sort out your problems before getting married, and remember that while singlehood can be painful, being trapped in a bad marriage is always worse. Someone I know, a single woman, once told me, she told me an expression which I like. She said, nobody is better than the wrong somebody.
Yeah.
So that's basically what you're saying, the same thing.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it's always like that. Singlehood can be very, very lonely, particularly when all your friends are getting married, particularly if you get a little older, when one begins to think that is fear one might not meet the right person. But unfortunately, in almost all cases, if you meet the wrong person and the relationship isn't good, that the misery created in that kind of relationship is worse than the misery of being on one's own.
And then you addressed another issue, which I think is an important issue, which most people don't speak about, and that's the economic issue. That we've set these economic expectations, and yet it's not possible because you get married, you're young, you don't really have a career, you haven't gone to school that much, and you're expected to move to a really nice community and pay tuition and so on, and yet these financial pressures always add to the instability of a marriage.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We've created a Jewish world in which, for many people, it's a normal aspiration to get married young, maybe stay learning for a while, and not really have many educational or professional accomplishments by the time you begin to have a family, to have a number of children, and also to live what is essentially a high-cost, high-maintenance, middle-class life with many pressures and expectations. And these sorts of things are simply incompatible. And trying to live a high-cost, middle-class existence on a small salary and so on, and the sense that one's success is judged by these materialistic criteria are enormous pressures. You know, I'm pretty certain that my marriage counseling, pre-marriage counseling, I always talk to couples about this, that the two major factors that create difficulties in marriages are family issues of whatever sort and financial issues. And financial pressures of this sort, some are astonishing, and they create pressures not just on the couple, but they create enormous pressures on the family as well, because there's an expectation that the family, the parents, or broader family will kind of help. And that might not be possible, particularly if there are lots of children, or the parents themselves are not in a very strong economic position.
And do you think that pre-marriage counseling is a very advisable approach to take to a couple when they're contemplating getting married?
Yes. I believed in this for a long time, not in any major formal way with a therapist, but in terms of, for like in the Masada Kedushin, when I marry a couple, I always spend time not just teaching them halachas of how to be an observant Jew in a marriage, but also how to think about marriage, about how relationships work, about the Torah considers the function of sexuality, about how marriages sometimes don't work, how to manage conflict. I think these are very important issues, and I've found that to be beneficial to couples that I'm marrying to spend a few hours with them beforehand talking about these issues.
And do you think that during the Shana Rishona, it would be advisable to go not to counseling, but to these groups that would have, you know, deal with people who are going to encounter the normal issues that are going to come about in any marriage during the first year on a periodic basis? I mean, I'm a big believer in that.
I think there are some couples for whom they'd be useful, and other couples who really do quite well on their own, or their problems are so individual that the type of group that might not be helpful. But for people who have got some general issues and general questions, they might be helpful. I'm not sure they exist so much in London. What's it like in New York?
No, they don't have. They have some. I mean, there are programs out there. Not that many, but I just think it makes some sense not, you know, to stigmatize anybody or any marriage, but just to say, look, you know, if you've been married 6 months, you know, we're going to have a get together and just kind of talk and have a therapist or a counselor and just talk about the normal things and have people, you know, talk about it. I just think it makes sense.
Yes, I mean, I think perhaps one other thing to talk about is that for many couples, and I find this an increasing phenomenon, question that I'm much more and more commonly asked, is that couples are anxious. They see around them marriages that are failing, couples who seem to be very well suited or in love when they get married, and soon after it's all falling to pieces. And they're obviously concerned that this shouldn't happen to them. And more commonly, I'm asked whether couples will be permitted to wait a while before starting a family in order to make sure their marriage is very stable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certainly the traditional model would not generally allow for that. It's much more normal for couples to, you know, get married and see what happens. And, you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu bless them with a baby very soon after they get married. Then so be it. But I'm more and more couples, it's not always the right thing to do, but I'm very aware that I'm getting asked this question more and more frequently. Mm-hmm. That couples are clearly gaining a sense that they really need to invest time in stabilizing their marriage and being certain that things are on a good footing before bringing children into the marriage.
And one last question. Do you have the same problem that we're having in the States, which is it seems that it's far easier for the men, boys, young men, to get married than it is for the young women?
I think so. I think it's a universal problem. I've asked around in places when I've been in the States, I've been in Israel, and here. For reasons which I don't fully understand, there does appear to be, it does appear, for want of a better phrase, it to be a man's market, in that the number of eligible, let's say, commitment-capable, solvent, normal men is the pool of men is smaller than that of women. And it seems to be easier for men to get married. And there do appear to be more women who appear to be in every way eligible, and I'm sure make a great partner, but nonetheless struggling to find someone. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, Rabbi Dr. Harvey Belofsky, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on my program, and I tell everybody, look forward to the Jewish Action, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from Rabbi Belofsky many, many times, and appreciate your coming on the program, and best of luck to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.